What's the Tea? Brought to you by B-Trans Support and Community with Pride Radio.
Proudly supported by Pride Action North.
Hi everyone, it's Rose,
Josie,
and Dan
from B-Trans Support and Community, the peer support service run by trans people for trans people right here in Newcastle. And this is What's the Tea? Today, we're discussing the current climate of what it means to be transgender.
A very fun topic, and totally not truly depressing at all.
No, not at all depressing. Unfortunately, as much as we like to celebrate and we love to share pride in, you know, in ourselves and others, there are, unfortunately, a lot of negatives that we do have to experience. That list seems to be ever growing, as we'll learn eventually over the coming weeks. So today we're talking about the 9-year wait list. And you might be thinking, what is the 9-year wait list? It's something we've brought up on the show before, but haven't gone into a whole lot of detail about. But for the uninitiated, the 9-year wait list is currently how long it takes to get referred as a transgender person to a gender identity clinic in the northeast of England. Across the country, there are gender identity clinics for each region, but the times for referral are largely the same, if not just a little bit under, than Newcastle. What that means is, as a result, when you go to your GP and you say, hi, sir, hi, ma'am, I am a transgender and I would like to get some help with that, please. You know, something that I think for all of us, even just the concept of that appointment alone was a little bit daunting.
I put that off itself for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. There is a reason that I came out a couple of years ago, but only got on the waitlist in January of last year. But that waitlist means as soon as you go to your GP and express that you are trans, you're now waiting a decade for anybody to do anything about it. And that's a little bit interesting because you start to look into the numbers and it doesn't quite line up. You can submit something called a Freedom of Information request to any public body to get freedom of information. And with that, with the GICs, you can ask exactly how many new patients are being submitted, how many appointments are occurring per day, and things like that. Unfortunately, at the Newcastle Clinic, they seem to be doing less than a single appointment per day, which isn't exactly the greatest benchmark when you can check the website and check the state of how many people are referred, and every month it's hundreds of people referred. So the numbers very much simply don't add up. The NHS do state that, obviously, the GICs are there for better access to trans healthcare. But you look at the alternative solutions in other countries that have good rights for transgender people, and the most common implementation is informed consent, which is available in select clinics in the UK, and those that get access to them are very lucky. We don't have informed consent in the rest of those clinics. We have preventative access. The NHS will just let us rot, effectively, for the next decade while we try and make sense of anything.
It's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think it might help if we kind of explain what, like, the process of getting a referral is.
So, in terms of getting the referral, obviously you have to have that conversation with your GP. That form gets submitted to a gender identity clinic. The gender identity clinic will eventually reply and say, yeah, you're on the wait list. Beyond that, there is a first appointment and no communication that you will ever receive from the GIC between your referral and the first appointment. The first appointment will occur at some point within the 9 years. For us, it appears to be 5 years into it.
Yeah, when I got my referral, it was a 2-year-long wait list that I'm 5 years into.
Yes, so, yeah. It's very strange how fast the numbers don't add up.
Yeah.
So that's incredibly annoying to have to wait 5 years just to be seen. But that nothing happens in that appointment after 5 years. They just say hello and then tell you to come back in 4 years.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself is incredibly confusing just to grasp.
So what is the point of the first appointment then?
Exactly. It's, you would think it's like, redundant.
It's pretty much like an interview, and then like where they ask all the questions all about your childhood and whatever, And then in your second appointment, you're seen by a doctor who looks at the notes from the first appointment and goes, I agree.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
And then you assess something like a treatment plan.
Yeah. Then you start a treatment plan.
But very helpful.
Yeah. All of that to be seen by two people mm-hmm. takes a decade. I will be 32 by the time that the NHS gets anything done with me. There's a good chance I won't even be in the country, so I won't even see the letter. It's incredibly strange. For the majority of people, they are effectively useless.
Yeah.
Their current implementation is fundamentally effectively useless, especially when you jump into the effects of that decade-long wait list and how negatively that impacts people mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Being told that there is no solution to your consistent problems for another decade just because somebody isn't willing to do that work.
Especially when a lot of people, it's taken a lot of, like, they've had to work up a lot of courage to actually reach out for that help.
Absolutely.
In the first place.
Yeah. For all of us, like, even getting to that very first step is an incredibly daunting process.
Mm-hmm.
Even coming out to parents, as we've previously discussed, is an incredibly daunting process. So to be told 10 years is, it's life-changing, really, for a lot of people. And
it's
a lot
terrifying.
Of people, yeah, then seek out other solutions like private healthcare or accessing healthcare from friends, even.
Mm.
So,
I know,
it's scary.
Anecdotally, I've also spoke with people who've just said, "Oh, I'm just not going to bother,"
mm-hmm.
like, and just completely live life in the closet forever because
there
just,
is, yeah, because there's yeah. no hope of a solution, and it's yeah. easier for people to just stay closeted, which mm-hmm. is, in effect, with the current design of GICs in their preventative access to healthcare, that's what they're aimed to doing. That's their aim. It is to prevent people from transitioning and to keep people in the closet, and that is sickening, honestly.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that, like, because it's, you know, 2024 or whatever, that like,
things are things good are, and things yeah. are improving. 6 years ago, I had a trans masculine friend in school at the age of 16. And I very distinctly remember a conversation with him where he's like, "Oh, yeah, I mean, at the moment, like, the laws and stuff, they're not that good, they're not that great, but I'm really hoping soon they'll improve and, like, there'll be better access for healthcare and things like that for trans people, and you'll be able to access it from the age of 16 instead of 18. I'm sorry.
How long ago was that?
That was 6 years ago.
Oh, not much has changed then.
There is a slope that we're on now that we are slowly sliding down, as we'll assess in the future. It's
wait.
A very scary environment that we're in.
Yeah,
when from every angle you can argue there is no way the government is actually trying to help us with our transitions.
Oh, definitely not.
No, in the same sense that even beyond the wait list, you can opt to have referrals for surgeries such as an orchiectomy or a mastectomy, whatever you feel is appropriate for you. You don't have to have them, but they're available. If you choose to have them, you have to go back through the gender identity clinics and get referrals for other specialist doctors that then take an additional up to 5 years.
My favorite. I love waiting.
So in total, now we're at 14. We're at 14 years.
Doing good.
So that's useless. That's useless for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That is just yeah. outwardly
especially
useless.
People who are like older as well.
Yeah. You like out. The. I think a lot of people imagine, you know, trans people as a very like young people thing.
Yeah.
And I can see that because we're definitely louder this generation and
well,
more willing to, I think, spread awareness ourselves.
Yeah, I also feel like it's just, it's who's on TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just younger people are on TV.
But of course, that's not all trans people.
Mm-hmm.
Working for Be Trans Support and Community as we do, we interact with a large number of the community, young and old. And have plenty of service users, even within just our charity, that have started transitioning at, say, the age of 60,
yeah.
the age of 70, and nobody's stopping them and nobody should. But when you talk to these people and say, oh, it's 9 years before you have any chance of getting hormones from the NHS, sometimes there's not 9 years left.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, imagine being like an older person being told, oh, you have to wait 9 years, and then being like, well, yeah, be around anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's like how it's useless.
Mm.
It is useless to be told that. And it's honestly incredibly depressing, but there's currently nothing we can do until there is some sort of reform. Speaking of anything we can do, though, in terms of healthcare, that's where things like GPs come in. They're sort of the middlemen for us.
Mm-hmm.
They do perform a role in some cases where, say, if you're accessing healthcare via private healthcare,
mm-hmm,
with a service such as Gender GP or Your GP, then you can get a shared care agreement with your GP where they will issue the prescriptions and you can just go to a pharmacy and get the hormones that you're getting from private healthcare, and the GPs will help you with that. Unfortunately, yes, that is entirely at the GP's discretion, and they can choose to turn you around on the spot.
Yeah.
That is what happened to me. That is what happened to a lot of people I know. GPs don't have to help you, and at the best of times, don't know a lot themselves.
Well, they get their funding cut if they do shared care. Yep.
They lose all and complete funding for you as a patient if they do any form of shared care agreement, not just like a HRT one. Like, if you go for any private healthcare, they just lose their funding for you completely as a patient. So
they're
incentivized to not take it, really.
They are incentivized to do that, but in effect, they have a duty of care.
Yeah.
And by ignoring a transgender person's wishes for care.
Yeah, I think that's why some people still will... Well, some places even would still do like the shared care because they know...
But there are plenty of places that do, and I've got many friends that are on those agreements, and I'm shocked every single time I hear that somebody is on one.
Because
it is very rare. Not many people will do it. But even then, even if the doctors know what they're talking about and they say, we don't want to do that, there are some doctors that haven't even heard of what you're talking about in the first place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I went into my GP at the beginning of last year with over 200 pages of printed off document that I had sourced of NHS guidelines that the doctor could have Googled themselves, but I printed them out, I highlighted and stickied and post-it noted, gave them all of the information that was necessary, said, you are allowed to give me healthcare, you're allowed to help me in this situation, and they chose not to. Learning on the spot all of these new facts. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I see, that's very interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Refusing healthcare. When the GICs don't care about you and doctors will very rarely care about you, it seems like there's not a lot of solution and it's very scary to get that answer.
Yeah, it doesn't feel very hopeful at all.
No. Beyond that, there are a couple of things in the current climate that don't help. There are instances in such with death, where people are issued a death certificate. Now, I'm sure many members of the general public will be familiar with the Breonna Gear murder and the trial that occurred recently. The two people responsible were convicted, which is fantastic. However, Breonna Gear not having a gender recognition certificate, which, by the way, is obtained after being on the wait list and completing both of your appointments after 9 years, then you can get a death certificate in your chosen gender. Breonna Gear being 16 and nowhere near completing the wait list will have her death certificate in her assigned gender at birth. That's kind of disgusting. Even if the family ask for it to be changed, nope, not allowed. There was a petition that went to the government with thousands of signatures. Nope, not allowed.
Jeez.
So even in death, we're not allowed dignity.
Very upsetting.
Yeah, it's incredible that
I have anecdotally seen a lot of people who are scared that, like, if they do die young because of, like, a hate crime or whatever, that they're worried that maybe as well, like, if they don't have supportive families, that, like, their headstone will forever have their wrong name on.
Yeah, and there's also like that, absolutely, yeah. Mm. There's not even any risk that, there's not even any guarantee, excuse me, that you'll have that. So,
yeah.
If that could change, that would be fantastic.
It would be.
But I don't think that will. And there are a couple of things that lead me to suggest that. But one of them is things like the Daily Mail falsely reporting a quote-unquote loophole, which was one of the most hilarious articles I read recently.
I remember you showing us this.
I do think it was quite funny when you showed it. So, yeah.
So the context for this Daily Mail article is for a transgender person to obtain a new passport with updated information on, you speak to your doctor, who will prepare a statutory declaration stating this person is allowed to be transgender and allowed to change their information.
Mm-hmm.
You then submit that form to the government, the letter, and your updated details. Jobs are good, and it comes back. You get your passport. That's the official process. It's been like that for years. For years. And nobody has said anything, and nobody has complained, because that's just
how
the process works.
Yeah. So what's the loophole?
So last week, the Daily Mail launched an article stating that there was a terrible loophole within the documentation system of transgender people, leading to self-IDing, which is a concept that the government despise, where transgender people can choose how to identify themselves on documents.
Ooh, scary.
Yes. So the Daily Mail quote this loophole where trans people can just change their information. And it's like, ooh, scary. Ooh, what are they going to do? Change their information to have their new name?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Spooky.
Ooh, get them. No, it's incredibly strange when not only is it just entirely innocuous, would just updating a passport information, and B, that's the official process. Nobody was arguing that beforehand. No, that is literally the official process that the government put in place.
Didn't they post it like a few minutes into New Year's Day as well?
It was at exactly midnight when the clock struck 12 on New Year's Day of 2024. So that was a funny article to pop up on my phone.
Happy New Year. Stop changing your information.
Exactly. And now it's a slightly scary concept when things like that come into the news. Because you do come to think, anybody who has changed their records on a passport or with the DVLA for a driving license, another thing you can do.
Yeah, I've done that.
Mm-hmm, Tim.
In theory, there is absolutely every potential of the government just being able to keep track of what records have changed and revoke documents that have been changed.
Mm.
Now, the likelihood of that occurring, I think, is slim, or I would like to think is slim, and I would like to think there'd be ridiculous outrage over that, but it is an absolute possibility that documents will be revoked. So when people like the Daily Mail, who are renowned for transphobia, by the way, in general.
Oh, yeah.
When they start stirring the pot like that, it's not just incredibly frustrating, it's genuinely terrifying. Because I don't want to have a knock on my door from the government, you know?
Yeah.
That's not negotiable, that's not on. It feels very fascist. It feels very... I think 1940s.
No, I wasn't there.
Well,
really?
It's funny. It's a funny topic, actually, that not a lot of people are familiar with the fact that the Nazis in Nazi Germany burned down the Hirschfeld Institute before they ever started prosecuting Jews. The Hirschfeld Institute was the world's first research center for transgender people.
Yeah.
I've read about that online. Yeah.
And it was burned to the ground. And all of the documents inside it, all of the research, burned to the ground. That was in the 1930s. So when I go to something like a counter-protest in the middle of Newcastle, you know, for trans rights, you know, stating I'm allowed to exist. That is the protest, by the way, protesting the fact that I'm allowed to exist. That's a real protest.
Radical statements, heroes.
Yeah. It's very funny to look on Twitter afterwards when I get home and I see videos of the opposition literally, unironically, reciting Mein Kampf through a speaker system in the middle of Newcastle.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen a few people like waving actual like Nazi flags as well.
Yep.
I have not, because I tend to stay away from online things.
Well, this is why. This is why the vast majority of trans people choose to do that.
Yeah, no.
Because you look at anything, you step outside, and somebody wants to harm you, and it's not fun. So to have actual literal Nazis walking around in current day is something I didn't think I would say.
No, yeah, a bit spooky. Not a fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my daily thought process started becoming, what should I have for breakfast? What should I make for dinner? Try not to think about how everybody wants to kill you. Maybe you shouldn't go outside. Feed the cat.
Exactly. So it's mixed in there.
Let's stay offline for a while.
Mm-hmm. And that is a justifiable approach and one I recommend, actually.
Chronically offline for the past year.
Yeah.
Don't tell me anything that's happened, because I don't know.
The only time I ever get any sort of like news is whenever I visit my parents' house. Mm-hmm. Like, I actively avoid the news because it's always either just depressing for me or just irritating to see what people are arguing about my existence.
Yeah, and that's something you'll see in every single comment section online to anything to do with transgender people. If you notice it yourself, scrolling through Facebook, if you see a transphobic meme, you look in the comment section. Oh, buddy.
I don't scroll through Facebook.
Oh, buddy.
I don't look at comment sections.
Oh, unfortunately,
I don't do anything.
People do. Unfortunately, people do. And unfortunately, it gets out there. And the conversations that people have is insane when, at the end of the day, it literally comes down to letting me breathe.
How dare you ask for that?
I know.
Awful. So that was the current climate of being trans in the UK. If anyone wants any advice, wants to chat, or has any other queries, feel free to follow us on social media at BeTransNB. And make sure you tune into the next episode of What's the Tea, where we'll be talking about dating as trans people, which will hopefully be a bit...
later.
Yeah, hopefully.
Remember to follow BeTransNB on your socials and reach out to us if you have any queries about the services we offer.
What's the Tea? Proudly supported by Pride Action North. Pride Radio.